Your food. Once you begin binging on food around the age of 10, using it as a drug to numb your fear and loneliness, it takes hold. It becomes a part of your existence. You don't recall trying to stop, only to be strategic about what you're eating so as not to draw attention. You learn to get food out of the kitchen silently. While others are in the house, you stand in front of the fridge and drink chocolate syrup as if it's a beverage. You can get the lid off the old King Cole glass cookie jar and back on without the familiar clunk. You eat from many different bags and boxes and packages. It is sugar, grains, and processed non-food food that draws you in. Your weight remains normal somehow, allowing you to be perceived as normal. The binge eating poisons you, but you cannot stop. It is like this for 2 or 3 years until you begin to drink alcohol and use drugs. Once that begins, the food takes fourth place behind drugs, alcohol, and men. It is still there, the obsession. You still binge. You do not purge. Not yet. There is no reason because you are not fat. Not yet. By midway through your 16th year of life, your drug addiction, alcoholism, and sex and love addiction land you in treatment. The last of those, the addiction to sex and love, will not be identified or understood by you until you are 50 years old. It is the member of the trifecta that escalates the other two such that you can't sustain them any longer. You are living a double life. Good grades, always employed, missing curfew only twice in your life, a polite, affable family member. That does your chores and checks all the required boxes so that you can hit it hard in your alternate universe and go undetected. At the point at which you are betrayed and discarded by your boyfriend, you are drinking a fifth of liquor each day and smoking weed from waking to sleep. It gets away from you. You are exhausted and your body is thin enough to draw concern. As you walk up the steps to the treatment center, having used drugs with a schoolmate earlier in the day in a last desperate grab at your soon-to-be old life, you wonder what will become of you. What will you be without these addictions that define you? That fill the void and quiet the voices in your head. In treatment, the food comes back to its rightful place. It has been waiting patiently. Your compatriot, who has since died from kidney failure, sits across from you in his assigned seat in the dining room and gives you his German chocolate cake, which you stack upon your own. He knows you like it. After 28 days of pancakes and cake and various other foods one would expect to find in an adolescent treatment center, your tiny clothes are a little bit snug. You are still quite thin by all standards, but the boyfriend, the one who discarded you, comments on it. Yes, you go back to him, knowing he is a liar and a philanderer. You are addicted. He pinches a tiny bit of flesh on your side and expresses disbelief that you are capable of gaining weight, as if you are immune. You are not, of course. He confirms all the messages you've received in your life. Fat is bad. If you are fat, you will not be wanted. You will be worthless. How dare you gain weight? How fucking dare you? You stay clean and sober, knowing that you brushed death, or at least brain damage, a few times, as you tend to drink until you drop. There is no off switch. Sex and food are now number 1 and 2 on the anesthesia list. In addition to dating 2 boys from your treatment experience against all advice, you also move on to a young man you meet at Narcotics Anonymous. He is in his early 20s to your age of 17. He has a level of maturity that you enjoy. You have sex constantly. He remarks one day that you are, quote, not noticeably fat. What he means is that you are not muscular. You are soft and fleshy. It is reinforced. You are your appearance. You must meet the standards of these men, or you will be discarded. You are a normal-sized person on the thin end of the spectrum, and it is still not good enough. How dare you not have an ideal body? How fucking dare you? You start college at 17 in another state. You are 16 months clean and sober. Your sober support group is left behind. You are terrified. So much so that you go to the University Health Center and tell the doctor you're sober and have no support system there. He very helpfully walks you to an AA hall that is a mere block from your dorm. It is what is called low bottom, with its dirty sofas and smoke-stained walls and dinginess. You don't look like you belong there, and the older men at the noon meeting ask you if you are lost. No, you tell them you are here for the meeting. You share, and as is always the case in these genius 12-step fellowships, are accepted for your shared malady. At your parents' first visit, your dad remarks that you look thin. You surmise this is from the fear and loneliness, which you mostly treat with Cat Stevens and J.D. Salinger. Eventually, though, you gain some comfort and familiarity and a few friends. Food becomes important again. In addition to all one would expect in the cafeteria, there are late-night burgers and junk food. You eat past the point of fullness most of the time. Somehow you avoid significant weight gain. You date someone who is dishonest, cheats on you, and discloses late in the relationship past sexual practices that give you an AIDS scare. It is the late 80s, so it is a bona fide scare. You seek out a test, which is not easy to find. Your dad helps you. You don't want to ask him, but you must. The test is negative. You return to this man briefly. It is a reflection of the way in which you do not value yourself, the way in which you conform to the needs and preferences of the men you are with, so they will accept you and not betray and discard you. It doesn't work. You find out he is also having sex with another woman in your dorm. That is finally enough to end it. When you return home the summer after freshman year, you dabble with the old boyfriend who used and tossed you aside. You try to entice the young man from Narcotics Anonymous with more than friendship, and he rejects you with his adult boundaries. You can't bear to be without a man. You go to a new AA meeting and meet a man 14 years your senior. You are 18, he is 32. He pursues you. You have an intense summer romance. You try to break it off, the suffocation beginning to envelop you, but he reacts so strongly that you acquiesce. You acquiesce because he is somehow more important than you are. He moves to your university town, 3 hours north, so that you can live together 6 months into the relationship. You have not married him yet, but you will at the ripe age of 23. You begin to eat in a way that shows up on your body. Although your husband yo-yos up and down 40 pounds many times over the course of the 17-year marriage, it is your weight that is his focus. After several years of binge eating, your body reflects it. Your husband tells you that you are fat and unattractive and that you are not the person he met and fell in love with. He removes his love, criticizes and shames you, monitors what you eat and questions it. The person who promised to love and cherish you removed his love because you don't look the way he wants you to, the way you looked at 18 years old. How dare you not look like you're 18? How fucking dare you? Again, you are your appearance, and your appearance is inextricably tied to your weight, and your weight is inextricably tied to your value. You are objectified and dehumanized. You have experienced this with such regularity that you believe this to be true. During the years that you live in a larger body, even strange men that don't know you feel free to comment. You are out running one day, and from the golf course, a man, standing with several other men, shouts, quote, "Run faster." You want to scale the chain link fence, march onto the green, and punch him square in the throat, crushing his windpipe. Instead, you cut your run short to avoid passing them again, and most likely binge. When you share the painful experience with your husband, he further shames you, agreeing with those men. You had started working in your chosen field the summer before your senior year, so you begin full-time work immediately upon graduating from college. You find meaning, satisfaction, and success in your work. You and your husband are eventually able to buy a nice big house in the country under the majestic shadow of Mount Rainier. You are still binge eating, as is he. It has become one of the things that bonds you, the abuse of food. It is counterintuitive to his hateful attitude about your weight. He wants an eating buddy and also wants you to look a certain way. You try many diets and exercise routines over the years. You take weight loss supplements, buy many things from late night infomercials. Nothing works because the binge eating outpaces any antidote with which you try to treat it. One day you catch yourself in a reflective surface at the mall. Your brain doesn't recognize the woman at first. It then computes that it is you. During this same period, you attend a wedding of an old friend, and one of the guests, whom you knew growing up, remarks, quote, "I wouldn't have recognized you." You know what she is referring to and want to disappear, to die of the shame of being fat. You are fat now. You are not a regular weigher of your body, but you estimate you top out at around 210 pounds. On your tall but slight frame, it is a lot. And objectively, you don't carry it well because it is the unnatural symptom of food addiction. You have what you refer to as pumpkin head. You carry the weight everywhere, including your face. You change your hair countless times in these years, trying to escape the inescapable. And then one day you are reading Redbook, and in the back there is an ad for yet another miracle diet. The investment is small, maybe $15, including shipping. You have invested thousands at this point and think this is a small price to pay for something else that might work. When the book arrives, you read it cover to cover and commit to its guidelines. One thing is made quite clear: there is no sugar allowed. You are encouraged to weigh your food portions to retrain your brain as to what a normal portion size looks like. But there are still grains allowed in limited amounts. You do this diet as written for a while, and your body begins to shrink. Even when you begin to cheat on the diet, eating more bread products and less fruit and vegetables, and occasionally allow a sugar binge or a pizza, you shrink back down to around a size 8. The approval starts almost immediately. You are no longer the subject of scorn, exclusion, and disapproval, a waste of a woman who would otherwise be attractive if only she were thinner. You are acceptable again. It feels like a drink of water after a long thirst, but the acceptance from others is juxtaposed by the lack of acceptance of yourself. You are constantly in search of the next size down. A size 6 is surely more valuable than a size 8. Surely life will be better at that size. And then the terror of gaining the weight back sets in. You are still very much in conflict trying to manage the cravings and hold off the binges. You begin to control this by eating endless large bowls of air-popped popcorn with chemically simulated butter spray on it. It allows you to shovel large amounts of food in without adding weight to your body. But one day, you feel overly full after one of these huge serving bowls of chemical popcorn and decide that perhaps you should vomit. You go into the powder room, the only downstairs bathroom, and purge. Although painful, it comes up relatively easily. There is an odd euphoria. You feel successful. Maybe this is the answer. You can eat what you want and purge it before the dreaded calories are absorbed.